This is from Nectar of Devotion. It's verse number 5. Lord discusses three types of devotees. It's Krishneti yasya giritam manasa dridyeta jikshashti chet pranatibish chabhajantam bhajantamisham sushushaya bhajana vigyam ananya anya anindadi shanya ridam ipshita sangha labdhya. One should mentally honor a devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation and is engaged in deity worship. One should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who has advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. It says Ananya. Bhajan Vigyan Ananya Anya Nindadi Shunya Ridam. So now, Rupa Goswami says that in this verse he tells us how to deal with three types of devotees: Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. So it appears from this presentation and what we're reading now, these terms will appear at two different times. Because now the person is only, in one sense, he says eligible. He's eligible to begin. Because this is the very beginning of Nectar Devotion. It's only chapter 2, verse 16. So these same terms are, before one's even initiated, let's say bhaktas can fall into three categories of eligibility to begin Vaidhi Sadhana. Exactly what Rupa is discussing here. Now, after they're initiated, there's also three categories. One is Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttam. And that's what Prabhupada is saying here. So that's why there seems to be some, maybe, confusion. But I'll read some more, and you can get more understanding. So Kanishtha Adhikari, he has received Harinam. So obviously it's different than what we've been discussing. All of these three we discuss, they're eligible to begin Vaidhi Sadhana. So Kanishtha, he has Harinam. He's trying to chant the holy name. And then the Madhyam, he's also initiated in similar characteristics. He's expert in Shastra, etc. The Uttamadhikari is not interested in blaspheming others. His heart is completely clean. And he's attained the state of unalloyed Krishna consciousness. And then he says, according to Sri Rupa Goswami, the association and service of such a Mahabhagavat or perfect Vaishnava are most desirable. The Prabhupada's saying here, if he's saying this, that Uttam Adhikari, he's a Mahabhagavat. As I mentioned, there's also three levels of Uttam. One should not remain a Kanishtha, that goes on. One has to raise himself. The Madhyama Adhikari worships the deity. We can see from, and then it talks about Sahajiyas. And when one's initiated, then he should be accepted as a Vaishnava. Now, one should immediately be accepted as a bona fide Vaishnava if he's taken initiation, and should be offered obeisances. Out of many such Vaishnavas, one may be found to be very seriously engaged in the service of the Lord and strictly following the four regular principles, chanting the prescribed number of rounds, and always thinking how to expand Krishna consciousness. Such a Vaishnava should be accepted as Uttam Adhikari, a highly advanced devotee, and his association should always be sought. So here in this explanation of Uttam Adhikari, it's not so demanding or limiting. He's saying he follows the four regular principles, he chants 16 rounds when he preaches. You're hearing what I'm reading? And he says, so one place he says, what Prabhupada is telling us here, he's telling us in this purport, there's three types of Uttama Adhikaris. First, he described the Uttama Adhikari. His heart is completely clean. He's attained the realized state of unalloyed, which means pure Krishna consciousness. It means there's no gunas there. Unalloyed means no tamagun, no rajagun, no sattvagun. I mean, alloyed means mixture. He's not interested in blaspheming others. So he's not saying anything about preaching here. He's the Uttama Adhikari, highest devotee. He's very advanced in devotional service. And then he says, such a Mahabhagavat or perfect Vaishnava is most desirable. Now he's talking again about Uttamadhikari. And look what he says here. Someone who's seriously engaged in serving the Lord, strictly following regular principles, chanting fixed number of rounds, and always thinking how to preach, he's an Uttamadhikari. See, now there's a different criterion given here. So this is proving my point about the different levels of Uttamadhikari. Or a highly advanced devotee, and his association should be sought. And then, so, because other acharyas explain these ninefold divisions. There's three types of Kanishtha, three types of... then, let's see where else he says about channeling names, carefully avoided ten offenses. Then, now he quotes... He quotes from 22nd chapter of Madhyalila Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yanhara komala shraddha se kanishcha jana krame krame teno bhakta one whose faith is, again, komala, soft and pliable, is called neophyte. But gradually, by following the process, he can become an uttam, first-class devotee. Everyone begins his devotional service from neophyte. Listen to this. Everyone begins his devotional service from the neophyte stage, which means Kanishtha. But if one properly finishes chanting the prescribed number of rounds of Harinam, he is elevated step by step to the highest platform, Uttamadhikari. So Krishna got, so... What's interesting is these same terms are here. Shastra yukti nahi jani drita shadavan madhyam adhikari se mahabhagyavan. Mahabhagyavan means he's most fortunate. Hey, this is from 22nd chapter of Madhyalila, verse 67. This is Snatan Shik. Someone has a cell phone turned on? Your cell phone's turned on, it'll interfere with the speaker. It's my turn now. They're trying to send a message out. So Sanatan Goswami, he says, a person whose conclusive knowledge of Shastra is not very strong, this seems to be paralleling this same teaching, but who has developed firm faith in chanting the Maha Mantra, is also undeterred in the execution of his prescribed devotional service, should be considered a Madhyamadhikari. Such a person is very fortunate. Mahabhagyavan. A madhyam is a shraddhavan. Remember, we heard that? Proto-shraddha, shraddhavan, and komala. Staunchly faithful person. He's actually a candidate for further advancement. Shraddhavan janahai bhakti adhikari uttamadhyam kanishta shraddha anusari. This is the same thing. This is exactly the same point we're discussing. This is 22nd chapter of Madhyalila, verse 62. He's saying the same thing. That there's Uttamadhyam Kanishta. One becomes qualified as a devotee. This is the Bhakti Adhikari, the qualification for Bhakti. Bhakti Adhikari becomes qualified as a devotee on the elementary platform, the intermediate platform, the highest platform, according to the development of a Shraddha. Exactly what we're saying, right? There's three levels of people that become qualified for Bhakti, which is a review of what I've been saying. And it says right here. And then he talks all about Shraddha. Now let's hear again this term, Uttamadhikari. When a person realizes himself to be an eternal servant of Krishna, he loses interest in everything but Krishna's service. Always thinking of Krishna, devising means by which to spread the holy name, he understands that his only business is spreading Krishna consciousness. Such a person is an Uttamadhikari. So you're an Uttamadhikari. So what is all this thing? Oh, Uttamadhikari is Mahabhagavat, pure devotee, Prem Bhakti. It may be Uttamuttam, but it's Uttamadhyam. You know, it's like this. Look at this purport, you can see. Very clear. Such a person is to be recognized in Uttamadhikara. He doesn't say anything. He realizes Siddhadeha, he's a premi. He doesn't say anything like this. Indeed, the advanced. Now he's saying here Uttamadhikari. Now he's saying, indeed, the advanced Uttamadhikari. You read a little bit. So that means there's if you say the advanced Uttamadhikari, what does that mean? No. If you say, here this guy's got a brain. If you say there's an advanced Uttamadhikari, that means there's an Uttamadhikari that's not advanced. The Uttamadhikari is what you're saying. Or there's one Uttamadhikari is less advanced. Now, listen, if you just go through this purport and see how he describes Uttamadhikari, you go through this. That's why sometimes Prabhupada will say, all my disciples are pure devotees. That's also there. So how to adjust all these things? So now he's saying an advanced Uttamadhikari, Vaishnava, should be accepted as one's spiritual master. Everything one possesses should be offered to him, for is enjoined that one should deliver whatever he has to the spiritual master. And Rupa Goswami advises, this is the conclusion, that one should be intelligent enough to distinguish between the Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttam. The devotee should also know his own position and should not try to imitate a devotee on a higher platform. Bhaktivinoda has given practical hints to the effect that an Uttam Adhikari, now this will be an Uttam Adhikari, can be recognized by his ability to convert many fallen souls to Vaishnavism. Now, one should not become a spiritual master unless he has attained the platform of Uttam Adhikari. So the Kanishta Uttam is Nishta. The Madhyam Uttam is Asakti. And the Uttam Uttam is Prema. It's like this. Therefore, a disciple should be careful to accept an Uttam Adhikari as spiritual master. I mean, what I mean to say, I made a mistake. I was saying that the Uttam Kanishta, he's on an upper level of Ruchi, coming to a Sakti. The Madhyam Kanishta is in a Sakti, and the Uttam, Uttam, he's on Prema. Because the Madhyam Adhikari is Nishta. Right. So the Kanishta Madhyam, he's some good steadiness. And then there's Madhyam Madhyam, then he's in some Ruchi. Then there's Uttam Madhyam, his Ruchi is very much Ruchi, and Samasakti is like this. Because I've heard description of these different divisions. I have it in my notes also. So, it appears, and the conclusion is that the present discussion is about the eligibility to begin bhakti. And once one has begun devotion and taken initiation, again there are three categories, rather nine categories, to make it more complex. The more you learn, the less you know. I mean, you stay around devotion for 5 years, 10 years, or maybe your whole life in some cases, and you think you knew something, and as you study more, you think, whoa, I know nothing. Well, really, we know, but it's more refinement. Refinement and clarification of the knowledge we're given. And there's no question of saying, Prabhupada didn't give us this, Prabhupada didn't tell us this, and we have to go somewhere else. That's not such thought. No need to entertain such a thought. Because everything's here. We have to read with in good association, hear in good association, and read with very finely and nicely, and we'll see. So it's rather interesting that even Prabhupada's purport, you can find these three divisions. Some comment, yeah?
Just to ask you, in the beginning you said that it is not advised to accept spiritual master as one who is just Uttamadhikari, and you described Uttamadhikari as not the highest stage, but then at the end you just proved that Uttam is Premi Bhakta, and on the end of the book it is said that person should be accepted, the person who Uttamadhikari should be accepted as a spiritual master only, one who can.
Yeah, that's that.
So it's kind of, you just proved on the end that Premi Bhakta should be accepted.
Well, yeah, if you have the fortune. That's a fact, no doubt. I mean, that's what he said. He says in the beginning, Rupa Goswami is saying that He's saying one should, I think it's here, that one should take initiation from the most advanced possible devotee so that he gets sufficient guidance on the path of devotion. Prabhupada is saying, Rupa Goswami is recommending. Otherwise one may, you know, he can take initiation from Madhyam, who's on the level of Nishtha, but he may not sufficiently advance to the perfection. But one has to consider also that the guru, even if the guru is on Madhyam, he's a Madhyam at the level of Nishtha, he's not staying there forever. That he's also progressing. That's one point. That today may be Madhyam, and by the time you get, you know, swim halfway across the ocean of Anartha Nivritti, he's a premi. That's one point. That must be very important. And the second point is, even if he's a Madhyam, he's at the level of Nishtha, your guru is a Madhyam Adhikari, eligible and qualified to initiate. He's level Madhyam, he's Nishtha, Nishchita Bhakti. And then you have him as your Diksha Guru, but then you take Shiksha. That's very much part of our tradition. And Jiva Goswami, and so many, it's always emphasized, even in Adi Leela, it says one can have one Diksha Guru, but any number of Shiksha Gurus. So Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru are equal manifestations of the Absolute Truth, which means they're equal manifestations of the Kripa Shakti Murti, or Kripa Shakti of Krishna. So what the Diksha Guru may not give, the Shiksha Guru can give. And that's why it's, this principle is there, because it's understood that not every Diksha, it's understood obviously by the Krishna himself who's giving all the Shastras, it's understood that not the gurus don't come out of a factory. You know, there's not a factory. They all come out looking the same. Like you buy a car, every Maruti looks the same. So it's understood that gurus are on different levels. They're Nishtha, Ruchi, Sakti, and some are in Prema. So because not all gurus are premi, not all gurus are premi bhaktas, not all gurus are merged in Nitya Leela or something. So therefore the scriptures say, because of this, then one should have one Diksha Guru, but any number of Shiksha Gurus. So that in both of these ways, because Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru are nothing but Krishna. They're personifications and manifestations or embodiments of Krishna. To lead the conditioned soul who's sincere and serious back home, back to Godhead. They're all playing the role. So if you're so fortunate, any connection with Sampradaya is fortune, and you'll get perfection. Once you're plugged in, you'll get perfection. Once you're connected to some family, say you're connected with a good family, and then your father dies or somehow he disappears, and then you're thinking, oh boy, now what? There's no one around. But because you have a good family, then they say, hey, look, so-and-so, his father died and his mother died and he's just a kid and he's pretty intelligent. He should be brought up and put to college. He's one of our Agarwals. You know, we have to take care of him. So everybody gets together. They all get together and say, yeah, and they support him. Some uncle or cousin or anything. Come on, he's one of our people. We have to support him. It doesn't look good. You know, he's a good guy. So they give him money. They put him through college and get him established in business. And support system or whatever they call it. So in spiritual circles, there's so much support system. You know, there's godfather and god uncles and grandfathers and so many things to help us.
Maharaj, you mentioned that they're both same manifestations of Kripa Shakti Diksha.
This is told in Adi Leela.
So in the case if someone's Diksha Guru for some reason deviates or fall down, and why should devotee, if he has connection with Shiksha Gurus, why should he take reinitiation if Shiksha Guru gives same support from Kripa Shakti, why should he still take reinitiation?
The reinitiation question comes into play in the analysis of the Bhakta's Shraddha. Because if his faith in his that deviated or fallen or whomever, Diksha Guru, because the Diksha Guru gave mantras, because Diksha means mantra, mantra Diksha. And he gave Gopal Mantra and Kam Gayatri, Guru Mantra, etc. And he deviated or left or fell or whatever. Now the disciple, if he starts to have doubts, he has doubts and thinks, well, since my Guru fell, then the mantras he gave me, there's no bhav in those mantras. There's no bhav there because the bhava of the Guru, the realizations and the bhava of the Guru are contained in the mantras which he gives the disciple. And when the disciple chants the mantras, he's supposed to actually see the guru in all the mantras. And if the guru is deviated and fallen, then a disciple may think, well, what are these mantras he gave me? Because if he went down, then he didn't realize anything from these mantras. And I have doubts, maybe if I'm not going to get anything by chanting these mantras, because he didn't have any bhava, or he didn't realize them, or somehow there's some problem. That's when the second guru, the one takes shelter of, shiksha guru, whatever, in consultation, this usually it comes from that side, because I'm familiar with gurus from different areas, and I've inquired from them about this point, and they say it's coming. They're coming to me. Disciples coming to me and say, "Oh, please, these mantras I got. I want to hear them again. I want to hear them again. I don't have faith in them. My guru went here and there. Please, I want to hear them from you because I have faith that you have, you know, that you have realization, and there's a lot of bhava and bhakti. And if I hear these mantras from you, then something will happen." Because that your bhava will come in my heart, your bhakti will come in my heart, and I'll get so much mercy through this. So usually it comes from the disciple side. They're begging, please, you're my shiksha guru, I have my diksha guru, but I lost my faith. And I even stopped chanting my mantras because I thought he left, and what's the use of these mantras? Although I'm chanting Hare Krishna. This is usually the way it happens. So then that compassionate shiksha guru that you've taken shelter of, or whoever, he will pray to Krishna, and if he's inspired, then he'll give mantras again to assist the development and progress of that devotee's shraddha, faith, because perfection is based on faith, on shraddha, as prema is nothing but pure faith. As one great Vaishnava said, that prema is the halo of Radharani. Halo means a jyoti. You say jyoti, you know, the effulgence. You see, when they do pictures of saints, they always put some glow or, you know, some yellow light around them. You know, they make the poster. They do it on the computer. You put the picture of the guru on the computer, and then you put in this big sunshine behind them or big light, and then you print out these big posters, and everyone sees, oh, it's Sai Baba, you know. And he's there with his kinky hair going out, and there's this huge light, huge Brahma Jyoti coming behind him, because the ultimate thing is Brahman anyway. And Sai Baba is just part of Brahman. And so they always depict like this. The saints can't have an ordinary background. You can't just take my picture and it's some blue background, a blue curtain or something. No, he's not a saint. That's looks like my cousin or my brother. But a saint, a big yellow thing and sparks coming out. And, oh my God, he's something different than us. So this is the reason why the mantras would be given again. Because if doubts are there, the disciple will always be thinking, well, I'm chanting these mantras, you know, but I don't want to take diksha, but I don't know, is there anything in these mantras? So these, analyzing the disciple, the shiksha guru will say, listen, I want to give you these mantras. And usually it comes from the disciple's side. But if the disciple has full faith in he left, he blooped, he deviated, whatever, but I have full faith in the mantras he gave me, and I know his mantras are full of bhava in his heart. But he may not know all those things about mantras. And then he starts reading, he says, oh, the bhava of the guru is in his mantras he gives. What if my guru blooped? If he had bhav, then how did he bloop? Or, you know, so many, it's doubts. It's called doubts, shamshaya. And all this comes in, then he's chanting, he says, I don't know, I don't forget these mantras. So that's why he should hear the mantras again. Or hear them, let's say, correctly, or what's bhav. So that's why I have a program at 11:30. So I don't have any time. Prabhu Goswami ki jai.